FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
This episode of the Financial Survival Network is brought to you in part by Sandstorm Gold Royalties. Sandstorm Gold Royalties is a different kind of gold company. They purchase royalties on select mining operations and receive a percentage of the revenue in return. Sandstorm now has a portfolio of over 185 gold royalties around the world. See how gold royalties differ from other gold mining investments at sandstormgold.com. That's sandstormgold.com. Sandstorm Gold Royalties trades on the TSX as SSL and on the New York Stock Exchange American as SAND.
Welcome. You are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz. It's 2419. Well, 10, 12 years ago, when we really got hit by the economic crisis, by the crash, back then gold was booming and things were really looking bad. And this spurred a prepping or prepper revolution. And so many of you out there found yourselves buying emergency preparedness food, stocking up your guns and ammo, water filters, all of these things. And at the time, many of you out there thought, these people are crazy. Why would they do this? This is nuts. Nothing can go wrong. This is America. Hey, well, before we get started, and if you're into prepping or thinking about prepping, well, write us an email, be a part of the show. If the email's great, we will read it on the show and discuss it. If it's really great, we'll have you on the show to talk about it yourself. And the email address for future reference, kl@kerrylutz.com. So we're talking about prepping, and somebody I've come to know over the years, expert in it, interviewed probably almost as many people as I have, a good personal friend by the name of Dunnigan Kaiser is with us now. Reluctant Preppers. You find it on the YouTube channel. He's done hundreds of them. Dunnigan, it's great to have you on the show again.
Thank you, Kerry. Thank you for inviting me. And I am here willingly and joyfully, not reluctantly. So there you go.
All right. Well, very few guests that we have on are reluctant. If they're that reluctant, we're not going to have them. We're not going to have you on. So, hey, but, you know, when I met you, you didn't seem to be a prepper. I met you at one of our Liberty Mastermind conferences. And you were like a regular working guy. And something happened here. So what happened?
Well, first of all, how can you tell a prepper when you see one? Because if you saw me and you said, this guy doesn't look like a prepper, maybe I didn't look wild or something. I don't know what it was. I wasn't dressed in camo fatigues or something.
Yeah, well, the lack of exposed weaponry. I don't know.
You might have been open carry at the time.
Yeah, you might have been a prepper, but you weren't an advocate at the time, and you weren't out there getting a message out.
That's
you were
right.
More of a consumer of other people's content or production rather than
that's true. In fact, I can probably blame you and the Financial Survival Network and the Liberty Mastermind Symposium as being one of the pieces in the puzzle that came together to sort of add up to form a critical mass that got me more interested in preparedness. So I'll put the blame right back in your lap. But actually, I'll start a little bit earlier. Is that I attended a public service lecture at my place of employment where they had it was in a large metropolitan area, and they had a police detective come in from the city police force to give us a talk about how you can keep your family safe. What are some measures you can take, whether you're out in public, whether you're at home, that kind of thing, just public safety tips and advice from a police detective to the public. And he talked about a lot of things, and I remember some things, but the one thing that just was stuck in my mind ever since that talk was near the end of the talk. He said, if there's anything that I want to make sure that you walk away with today, it's that we won't be there when you need us. And I thought, well, that's an interesting thing. Here's this. I'm taking my lunch hour to go listen to this guy who's here telling us all these ideas. And the main takeaway is that you're on your own. So that was one thing that was definitely a thought. I don't know. I guess it kind of started giving some initial impulse of curiosity of like, maybe I better start questioning some things I've been taking for granted. And I know another thing that really was a major mover for myself was a cascade of financial setbacks that hit our family. We were working hard, putting away maximum amount we could into 401k, and watching it, you know, with avid joy as the stock market marched up towards the Y2K peak and the dot-com era. And then our, as I think it was Barack Obama might have said it, when our 401k turned into a 101k, that really got me upset. And I thought, I just got to figure out a way to do that differently to reduce that amount of risk exposure, because I don't want that to happen again. So we started building up our 401k again, but we moved almost all of our value of that out of stocks and into a what was called a money market equivalent fund that was recommended by our broker, and because it could earn higher interest than we could get on savings accounts, that kind of thing. And that was called the reserve fund. I don't know if anybody's similarly suffered.
I think it got frozen to me. Right. It got redemptions got frozen when the crash hit. And did you ever get your money back?
Still no. We got parts of it back, but not all.
Distributions, like a check will come in the mail every few years that you're not expecting. And you say, oh, what's this? Oh, it's my money back. Isn't that nice? Well, how could they lose money? It's money market. It's like cash equivalent. They're in safe investments. But no, they were doing options. They were doing futures. And they just screwed you.
And yeah, when Lehman collapsed, they got damaged on the back end. And that's when you find out that the money that you think you're parking in the bank or parking with your money market funds or whatever, you think that they're in some stable, safe place, but they're totally not. In order to achieve a yield, those institutions are turning around and doing much more speculative things on the back end with your funds. Yes. So then I thought, okay, this is no good. Maybe I should look into savings bonds. So we dabbled with that for a little bit, and then also thought maybe just straight cash, just real cash. And then my son, this is where you come in the story, started doing research. We were homeschoolers, and he came to me and asked, where does money come from? And I said, like any good homeschool parent, hey, why don't you go do a research report on that? And you figure it out, and we'll talk about it.
At least he didn't ask you where babies came from. So he probably knew that as a homeschooler. He figured that out a long time before. So long story short, you said, this happened to me. I was playing by the rules. I did everything I was supposed to do. I got screwed. So, hey, and twice.
First in stocks, second in money market funds. And then he said, oh, by the way, Dad, cash is no good either, and neither is your savings bond, because it told me about sovereign debt exposure and how the FDIC insurance isn't worth a fraction of a cent on the dollar of what's in the storage. And it's like, okay, I got, what the heck? Where can you put your wealth? Where can you put the fruits of your hard-earned labor where that you can turn to them in the future? And and that's where started hearing about gold and silver. And of course, that was in the 2011 run-up.
We know what happened there.
Yeah, well, oh God. Let's just say I own some expensive gold and silver.
Yeah, well, coming back now. And
yeah, that's right.
And it's an insurance policy. You got to always
accumulate it more later, yeah. But we started accumulating other things. I guess it was also just kind of a coming to grips with this idea that nobody's going to take care of you. You're not going to get bailed out. You've got to figure out kind of your own bootstraps thing. And so I started listening to different sources than what I'd been before. And I started doing small things to take steps, because I was easily overwhelmed. I tend to be a bit of a perfectionist. And I started thinking, oh my gosh, if I can't count on the mail system working and the cell phone system working and the grocery store working and everything. And also we had some severe weather events in our neighborhood where we saw the store get cleaned over and there was an armed police officer at the door and the shelves were pretty much bare. And we thought, wow, if this were to happen when you weren't expecting it, that could really put you in a real crimp. So we started storing up some emergency food and some non-perishable ordinary foodstuffs and lots of supplies that, you know, paper towels and toilet paper and bottled water. People will get a crack out of that, because we've run an ad on our show that we made where we show us opening our pantry and you can't even get in because the door is so piled full of non-perishable supplies. But that we just started taking baby steps in directions of preparedness. And one of my other reflexes that I always have when I learn anything that I think is impactful is to try to share it immediately with others. And I realized I started writing out these elaborate outlines for all these sort of like online seminar things I was going to give. And I realized this is ridiculous. I'm not an expert on any of this stuff. I have kind of a common sense and kind of an engineering mind, but I'm not an expert on this stuff. So I thought, well, I'll do what my son did and just start interviewing people who are experts on it. So that's what started our Reluctant Preppers channel.
That's great. And, you know, you've gotten millions of views in how many years has it been? 4 or 5 years?
About 4.5 years. Yeah. And not just maybe five. And we've got over 32,000 subscribers and 4 million views, and really been blessed to have over, like, you know, put out well over 200 original interviews. So it's been a real blessing, and I've learned, keep learning more along the way, keep learning how much I have to learn.
Hey, and that's the whole thing. When you start down the journey of a site of hoping to educate other people on these things, which seem like they're very, very kind of basic, but when the cops tell you, hey, we're not going to be there, that is in the event of the ultimate disaster. They might not be there for a few days. In Florida, we have hurricanes. They're not there for maybe 3-4 days till they can open up the roads. But in the meantime, you know, every preparation, every prepper plan always comes to down to that old song by The Clash. Should I go or should I stay? Mm-hmm. If I stay, there will be trouble. You know, if I leave, it'll be double. You know, the reason why so many people stay put, even in the face of almost certain disaster, is because the fear of actually leaving and going someplace else, leaving your home to the whatever fate is going to be, is scarier than almost certain death or destruction of your home with you in it, right?
Yeah, it is a tough quandary to face. And I might have mentioned to you recently when we had a major gas leak in our neighborhood and had to make a quick scurried exit. We realized how ill prepared we were for really that kind of a thing. So we have been taking additional measures as time goes by. Frankly, the last 2 years or so, and this is a side light, is like life impact. You know, they say life is what happens when you're making other plans. Well, we were busy making preparedness plans. And then my Lyme disease that I've had for some time also showed up in my wife, which is something they don't tell you at the doctor can happen.
That can happen,
But it did. And so we've been just reeling for the last couple of years, and a lot of our money, a lot of our attention and time and everything has been going to dealing with that. So our preparedness steps kind of took a slow road for the last couple of years, but we just keep chipping away when we can in areas of that. But it's remarkable how different guests that I have on will add different pieces to the puzzle and give us different insights into things you can do, things that are basic steps that don't take all your time and all your money and all your attention, but you can at least do something to reduce your complete exposure to unacceptable risk for your family. And that, I guess, that was one more thing that hit me along the way, was this kind of this growing up to manhood kind of moment of realizing that I really am responsible for taking care of my family, and I was far from being prepared at doing that. So I'm taking steps in that direction.
Hey, and we are all, it's a process. That's the thing.
That's true.
I think you have to understand about prepping. Even if you're not an extreme prepper with a bunker in the backyard, whatever it might be, it is a process. It's a process of education, and then it's a process of acquisition and preparation. And nobody just knows how to do it. And you don't have to be an extreme prepper. It might be that you just have a closet with extra staples should the supermarket not be available for a couple weeks. You know, they always say, Donegan, we're 3 days away from chaos, because the supermarkets nowadays only have a 3-day supply of food. And what do you do when the supermarket runs out? You know, maybe you got another week's worth in your home. If you got some pasta, I bought a long time ago, I had a sponsor that was an emergency food preparedness sponsor. They sold it. That was their business. So I stocked up, and I have a year's supply of food in my house and like 12 of these bins that I've been carrying around through 4 or 5 moves. But I brought them from New York. I would never, ever be without them. ever. I know the food probably isn't that great and probably hasn't aged all that wonderfully either. But point is, I've got a year's worth of food and I always keep a couple gallons of water on hand and a water filter. That's first and foremost. So I'm sure a lot of people have listened to you, watched the channel, and have been in places like the Florida Panhandle where they got destroyed. So you've probably gotten a lot of emails from people who have followed your prescriptions and have literally had their lives saved by it.
Well, we've certainly gotten gratitude. Actually, it's interesting. The sister channel that we started, because as one of the people that we met along the way was an off-grid medical doctor. So we interviewed him on about, well, shoot, now it's like two dozen topics. It started out just being about preparedness. Mm-hmm. And people started asking more questions about sort of self-care. Because if you think about what is preparedness, preparedness is really to preserve and protect your health and wellness and well-being and your financial and your physical surroundings, that kind of thing, and to take care of your family. So one of the most critical aspects of that is your health. And people have been very interested in, we've been getting a lot of direct thanks, and it's really gratifying and humbling to get thanks from people who've really been helped by some of the information that some of our guests have been able to put there about self-care or ways of saving cost savings in the health area as well. So that's very gratifying.
That is a great thing. And I'm sure there's been people like in Pensacola or Panama City who just got their places destroyed. And probably because of what you did, hopefully other channels like you were able to get through it a lot easier than they otherwise might have been. So what do you think are the top three things that you need to do to prepare for any potential disaster that comes along your way?
It's interesting. Whenever I've asked guests on our show that similar question, one of the answers that comes back is that rather than some of the exotic threats that people tend to give attention to, you can even start with pretty basic things like severe weather events. And so depending where you live, mm-hmm. I have a son who lives in Southern California, frankly, in a tsunami zone. There's tsunami zone signs right in his neighborhood. I've got another a daughter who's on assignment out in the Middle East, and there's lots of tensions there that could be different, whether it's terrorists or that sort of thing. We live in a place that's affected by severe winter weather. So those are the kinds of things you can just start with and say, if that happens, if I get a severe weather event that's most likely for the type of area that I'm living in, what needs would I have if I need to basically rely on preparations that I've made that I can't go necessarily go get at a store at that time? And those would be that's one good place to start. It's just the first few basic things you predict you would need in a severe weather event that's for your area. I guess another one, you mentioned food already. That's kind of a universal. It's food and water, and ironically air as well. We live right near several major freight train rail lines, and it's not that uncommon that you'll see news stories about derailments of chemical train cars carrying anhydrous ammonia or other stuff that can get released in the atmosphere. What would you do if you woke in the middle of the night and thought the air I'm breathing smells no good at all? In fact, I just have a very close work acquaintance who was just returning this weekend from a travels to Asia, and they weren't able to leave their hotel when it was time to go because they had just done major fogging for mosquitoes outside, and the air was so thick with whatever chemicals it was unbreathable. And eventually they had to go, and they went through it.
I know, it happened
to
me.
And he's got extreme lung irritation, coughing, couldn't come to work today because of that. So bad air can suddenly make you realize how very vulnerable we are to that. So frankly, we actually bought some gas masks, and that's one of the things that makes me feel the most tinfoil hat-ish is we actually have gas masks in every closet in our bedroom in our home.
It's good for Halloween. I've been to China and they come down the streets with these DDT trucks with two nozzles or multiple nozzles on each side of the truck, and they just spray the hell out of it without any regard to anybody being on the street. And I remember my wife and I like running as fast as we could, and we got the tail end of it, but we got the hell out. So I know exactly what you're talking about. That's something I never thought about, the gas mask. I mean, hey, I'm more concerned in my place about floods, potential floods in Florida. What would happen if we got 40 or 50 inches of rain? We can take 24 inches here. I've seen it happen. We can't take 50 inches. We are going to be underwater. And luckily, I'm in a three-story townhouse. But still, do you stay or do you go? That is the biggest decision that you're going to make. And we talked on your show about how I was here for Hurricane Marie, I guess it was, and decided to leave, which turned out not to be the right course of action in retrospect. But in point of fact, was the best decision. So how do you advise somebody to go or to stay? Because there's such distrust of the government that the government will always tell you to get the hell out, and then you don't listen, you stay. What do you do?
Yeah, it's a serious consideration. And even those who do flee, we had, in fact, after the last interview you did with me, and we talked about that very issue, someone sent me a link to some additional interviews where they're talking about civil asset forfeiture, where different state police or local police in different states have a very high rate of stopping people and searching if they find any cash or things of value. They may say, hey, under suspicion that this may be drug related, we're going to impound this, we're going to confiscate this cash, and then the burden is completely on you to get that back. So here, even those you mentioned, if I stay, it'll be trouble, if I go, it'll be double, whatever, that can happen. So I don't know that there's one right answer other than just making sure that you at least have that option open to you, because if you don't have a pre-packed go bag that has your necessities in there, and or you don't have a trailer, or if you don't have a vehicle that's sufficient to carry, you know, your water or that sort of stuff with you, then you don't have that option. So at least make sure you give yourself that option. And frankly, if you are going to exercise the option to go mobile, you don't want to be strangled in a throng of others who are doing it at the same time. So it'd be better to do that in advance, do it proactively, get out ahead of the problem. When my wife and I were on a wedding anniversary getaway to the Yucatan Peninsula of Mexico, it wasn't until we arrived at the departure gate at the airport that we saw the video on the gate monitor showing Hurricane Emily approaching right where we were about to go into. Arrived there and they gave us the welcome. Here's your nice little cup of champagne. Here's your steaming hot towels. Now we're going to talk to you about our evacuation plans. And we actually did get evacuated out of there to the Cancun Convention Center, and the resort where we had booked really got serious damage while we were gone. Hurricane Emily just had its way with that place and took out all the beautiful picture glass windows and everything. So the part that really got to us, though, was that once we realized when we landed that we needed to perhaps avoid that, it was too late, because the airlines had already like jacked up the prices to like four times the price, and only a precious few were getting out.
Yeah, well, that's what happens. So, awareness if you're going into such a zone. And I could talk to you about this all day, but if you got to give three resources, we're going to wrap up, three resources to all of you out there listening, what would they be?
Well, here's one. I didn't think of this. I've shown these before. My son gave them to me for two different birthdays. These are different versions of the book by Dr. Arthur T. Bradley. One is the Disaster Preparedness Handbook. The other is Handbook for Practical Disaster Preparedness for the Family. These are really treasure troves. They've been really helpful to us. Another one is just there are, if you search best or top 50 preppers websites, you'll come up with a list of some really key websites at the top of the list that really have some helpful suggestions. One that comes to mind is The Organic Prepper by Daisy Luther and several others. Brad Harris at Full Spectrum Survival puts not only a daily news briefing out, but also all kinds of hands-on, real practical training type tips. Because one of the things you and I didn't mention, in addition to supplies, is sort of practicing and trying some things out, learning some skills,
doing some
whether
drills,
it's gardening or whatever.
Hey, and another thing that I would just add is medications. It's easy to get a 90-day supply now. Try to get 180-day supply no matter what, because that will be the hardest thing to get if you ever have to leave your home and you've got a short supply. Filling prescriptions, refilling them, you're going to have to get new prescriptions in all likelihood wherever your doctor is. Your doctor's in an affected area. Maybe your records are up in the cloud somewhere and your doctor will be able to access them, but maybe you won't be able to find your doctor because your doctor will be three states over because she already evacuated ahead of you. So the medication's crucial, keeping the bug out pack, which is, well, your aspirin and your analgesics and, you know, whether it's Pepto-Bismol or, you know, basic medications like that. Hey, Dunnigan, we really appreciate your coming on the show. Just tell us where we find you these days besides your YouTube channel, Reluctant Preppers.
Yeah, so we also have a website at reluctantpreppers.com, and our sister channel is healingyourself.life. And either of those are great places to start, because you'll see we have playlists set up both for our headline guests that tend to come back on quite often, that people keep asking questions, viewer questions, as well as main topics. So check out the playlist on either reluctantpreppers.com or healingyourself.life.
All right. Excellent. And hey, look, we'll have a link in the show notes, as always, to your site, and try to do it to your YouTube channel as well. Anybody who's watching this on YouTube or listening on a podcast, if you would please subscribe, like, and share. Subscribe, like, share. I feel like that's a drill in the Army, you know. Full metal jacket.
Stop, drop, and roll.
Yeah, full metal jacket. Subscribe, like, share. Subscribe, like, share. But
one
anyway,
more add-on to your comment about medication, folks, is to stop being dependent on prescription medications.
Yes.
Because on our healingyourself.life, there, we talk a lot about herbal and other natural things, and those you can really stock up on. So hey, that's always another good out.
And let's not forget that for most people, about 50 to 70% of your ailments will disappear if you lose weight and get down to your ideal body weight. You won't even need to do anything else but that. Weight is the most important measure of your health. Not that if you're a few pounds over, 5-10 pounds over, it's that big a deal. But if you got metabolic syndrome, you got type 2 diabetes, you've got high cholesterol and high blood pressure, losing weight will get rid of most of that. It did for me. Now I've gained a few pounds, blood pressure is back up, and I'm back to square one, but that will really help. And hey, so take a look at the site, financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Sign up for our free newsletter. We shoot it out there. There's 20,000 of you getting that newsletter when we get around to sending it out, which I've been a bit remiss lately, but I promise you it will go out regularly. Dunnigan, I can't thank you enough for coming on the show, for all that you do. We will talk to you again real soon. Be well, my
friend.
Thank
you. Thanks, Kira. It's been a pleasure.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.